All right, everybody. I'm Logan Alec. I'm a CPA, and this is my update for Wednesday, October 28th. Stocks are slipping, the Rona is spreading, and the Dodgers are winning. I will talk briefly about stimulus at the end of the episode. Why the end? Because there are some things to say about stimulus, but nothing that's really going to rock your world. Kind of just the same old, same old. There's no, you know, finally something happened. There's no, woo-woo, this is breaking. Nothing like that. So I'll touch on that at the end of the episode, but for right now, I want to talk about them Dodgers, 2020 World Series champs. Congrats to them. I saw a few fans in the comments. That was very cool. And congrats to the Rays as well. They obviously do not have as much money as the Dodgers do. They were the underdog of this series, but they put up a good fight. And this was an entertaining series, apart from game one, I think, right? And I couldn't be happier, especially on the heels of the Lakers' victory in the NBA Finals 17 days ago. This is all especially meaningful, given the loss of Kobe Bryant earlier this year. But beyond Major League Baseball, what I want to talk about today, before we get into a stimulus update later in the video, what I want to talk about is the Senate hearing that is taking place today, right now, as a matter of fact, in which the chief executives of some of the largest social media and tech companies on the planet, I'm talking about Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, Jack Dorsey, CEO of Twitter, Sundar Pichai, CEO of Alphabet Inc., which owns Google and YouTube, these individuals will be testifying today before the Republican-led Senate Commerce Committee about their treatment of politically charged content. These individuals and the policies that they implement, they possess an incredible amount of power, and the choices that they make and that those under them make in terms of what content gets seen and pushed on the platform and what content doesn't, not only algorithmically, but also in terms of proactively removing content from the platform or putting a warning on content saying, you know, hey, this post is misleading. That is an immense amount of power. I know for a fact that many people get most, if not all of their news and a lot of what they believe, framed by what they see on social media. And like it or not, companies, and especially media companies, are not unbiased actors. Obviously, Republicans and conservatives overall have felt that they have received the short end of the stick when it comes to content being policed on these platforms. The most recent examples they point to have been Twitter censoring the president's tweets, like this one. Twitter put out this message on one of Trump's tweets. The message said, "This tweet violated the Twitter rules about spreading misleading and potentially harmful information related to COVID-19. However, Twitter has determined that it may be in the public's interest for the tweet to remain accessible." What did the tweet actually say? It was a tweet by Trump basically comparing COVID-19 to seasonal influenza. Another recent example, the New York Post articles about the Biden family. I'm kind of intentionally being vague here. I imagine you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, Google it. I was going to do a video about this whole fiasco when that story broke, but look, I'm on YouTube, that's my platform, and I don't want to do anything that would compromise my channel, so to speak, right? Because at least Facebook and Twitter were not showing that New York Post article, and they suspended some accounts for sharing it. I wasn't sure if YouTube would follow suit. So anyway, right? The panel's chairman, Roger Wicker of Mississippi, has flat out accused these companies of cracking down and censoring conservative viewpoints, despite, of course, people like Dorsey and Zuckerberg denying any such thing. Wicker says that today's hearing will focus on what he believes to be unintended consequences of Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act. What is Section 230? It's a law that protects interactive computer services. That term is broad. And although the law was written in 1996, it's generally been viewed that social media companies, Google, etc., fit the definition of interactive computer services. So this law protects interactive computer services who publish information written by or created by third-party users, such as people on Facebook, people on Twitter. It protects the interactive computer service from liability for the content that users of its service create. It also provides protection from a civil liability for these interactive computer services when it comes to the removal or moderation of content created by others on the platform that the service itself believes to be obscene or offensive, even if the content produced is constitutionally protected free speech, as long as the removal is done in good faith. Now, this was all well and good and fairly straightforward in 1996 when the internet was basically a bunch of forums that people would post on and goof off about, right? Websites with user-generated content were just looking to cover their butts, right? They weren't even thinking about presidential elections. And without Section 230, I doubt that the internet and the World Wide Web would have grown in the rapid way that it did in the late 1990s and early 2000s. But here we are, 20, 25 years later, and Section 230 is coming under increased scrutiny when it comes to these interactive computer services, like in this case, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google, and their power when it comes to influencing what content people see and don't see on the platform, especially insofar as that power can influence people and how they vote in mass. Senator Wicker believes that the liability shields in Section 230 have protected tech companies from potentially ruinous lawsuits, but he says that they have also given these internet platforms the ability to control, stifle, and even censor content in whatever manner meets their respective standards. He says the time has come for that free pass to end. Yesterday, Trump's Justice Department wrote a letter to various congressional chairs pointing to the New York Post article fiasco I briefly mentioned earlier as a reason why reform of the rules under Section 230 is necessary. This letter read, "The events of recent days have made reform even more urgent. Today's large online platforms hold tremendous power over the information and views available to the American people. It is therefore critical that they be honest and transparent with users about how they use that power. And when they are not, it is critical that they can be held accountable. For example, the decision by two social media companies to restrict access to news content of significant public interest from the New York Post, a widely distributed journalism publication, is quite concerning." The letter concludes by saying the department rejects the view suggested by some commentators that Section 230 must be left alone for fear that any change to the law will cripple the tech industry. While Section 230 has helped build today's internet by enabling innovation and new business models, the internet itself has drastically changed since 1996. Online platforms are no longer nascent companies, but have become titans of industry. Platforms have also changed how they operate, functioning not as simple forums for posting third-party content, but rather employing sophisticated algorithms to suggest and promote content and connect users. Citizens are relying on the internet more than ever for commerce, entertainment, education, employment, and public discourse, and children are spending more time online, at times unsupervised, just as more and more criminal activity is moving online. All of these factors make it imperative that we maintain the internet as an open and safe forum and that we begin this work together now. We believe there is a path forward that preserves innovation while improving transparency, safety, and the free exchange of ideas. The department looks forward to working with Congress to address these challenges. Signed, Stephen E. Boyd, Assistant Attorney General. So that's what's going on today, Capitol Hill. That's the big news on Capitol Hill for today. Now, whatever position you take on Facebook and Twitter and censorship and all that, I think we do have to admit that times have changed since 1996 in terms of how the internet operates, the power that websites have, and I am personally looking forward to these hearings. I'll put in the link to the, in the description below to the live hearings if you would like to watch them today yourself. All right, now let's briefly talk about stimulus. Basically, Trump said at the White House yesterday that after the election, we'll be getting the best stimulus package we've ever seen. I'm not holding my breath, right? Pelosi put out another Dear Colleague letter yesterday blaming Republicans. What else is new? Trump also tweeted yesterday blaming Pelosi. What else is new? Same old stuff, different day, frankly, right? In Pelosi's letter, she said that this week they're continuing to put pen to paper, which I take to mean they're drafting language on stimulus. But if there's not an agreement, kind of a lost cause, right? At least before the election. Because clearly nothing will be passed before the election, right? And despite the president's tweet, and especially depending on how the elections turn out, we may not be looking at more stimulus until 2021 if a lot of Republican senators who were formerly begrudgingly supportive of stimulus because they didn't want to get voted out, but now if they get voted out, will they really care about stimulus during the lame duck session? McConnell's not enthused about stimulus either. As we know, he said yesterday he's not even sure that Mnuchin and Pelosi were ever close to a deal in the first place. And if the president loses the election, will he care about stimulus? It's frankly going to be quite frightening if there is no more federal assistance for the remainder of the year. The COVID-19 case counts are up again. Will deaths follow? I don't know. And whether you take the COVID-19 situation very seriously or whether you think it's much ado about nothing, you can't avoid the fact that we might be seeing more lockdowns again, at least in various states and localities, with the real possibility of nothing more coming from the federal government through the end of the year. That just won't be a good situation for many individuals in this country. Obviously, the election will be huge in terms of what happens. All right, everybody, that is my update for today. Thank you so much for watching. Stay tuned for a video later today on why I do not invest in bonds. I will see you then. Bye-bye.